Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 6 from Canto 4, Chapter 27.
Tasyam ajanayat putran
paranjanyam
paranjanah
satanye kadasha
virad
ayusho dham
Atat
yagat
Tasyam anjanayat
putran
Puranjanyam
puranjanah
Shatanya kanasha virad
Ayushordham
atat
yagat
Asyam
within her.
Ajanayat,
he begot.
Putran,
sons.
Paranjanyam,
in Paranjani.
Paranjanaha,
King Paranjana.
Shatani,
hundreds.
Ekadasha,
11.
Virat,
O
King.
Ayushaha,
of life.
Ardham,
half.
Ataha,
in this way.
Atyagat,
he passed.
Translation.
Great sage Narada then addressed King Prachini Parishat.
Oh, one whose lifespan is great, Virat.
In this way, King Paranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Paranjani.
However, in this business, he passed away half of his life span.
A report by Srila Prabhupada.
In this verse, there are several significant words, the first of which are Ekadasha Shatani. King Paranjana had begotten 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, and thus passed away half of his life. Actually, every man follows a similar process. If one lives for 100 years at the utmost, in his family life he simply begets children up to the age of 50. Unfortunately, in the present moment, people do not live even 100 years, nonetheless they beget children up to the age of 60. Another point is that formerly people used to beget 100 to 200 sons and daughters. As will be evident from the next verse, King Paranjana not only begot 1,100 sons, but also 110 daughters. At the present moment, no one can produce such large quantities of children, huge quantities of children. Instead, mankind is very busy checking the increase of population by contraceptive methods. The next paragraph is bashing contraception. We do not find in Vedic literatures that they ever used contraceptive methods, although they were begetting hundreds of children. Checking population by contraceptive method is another sinful activity, but in this age of Kali, people have become so sinful that they do not care for the resultant reactions of their sinful lives. King Paranjana lay down with his wife Paranjani and begot a large number of children, and there is no mention in these verses that he used contraceptive methods. According to the Vedic scriptures, the contraceptive method should be restrained in sex life. It is not that one should indulge in unrestricted sex life and avoid children by using some method to check pregnancy. If a man is in good consciousness, He consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation with intelligence, one advances in his ability to estimate the value of life. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good, conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing in Krishna consciousness and not for begetting a large number of children. Children are called parinama, or byproducts. And when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproducts should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. End of purport. Tasyam anjanayat putran puranjana puranjanyam puranjanaha shaitanya shaitani ekadasa virad ayushordham atatyagat. Great Sage Narada then advised King Prachini Parishat, O one whose lifespan is great, Virat, in this way King Puranjana begot 1,100 sons within the womb of his wife, Puranjani. However, in this business, he passed away half of his lifespan. That's a lot of children, even for one who has not had children. Just thinking of 1,000, I mean.
I know this.
King Prachini Parishat, to whom Narada is speaking, was in the line of Swayambhuva Manu, because going back to the beginning of the third canto, we hear about the sons and daughters of Swayambhuva Manu and the lineages that follow those sons and daughters. This is also still in the early stages of Satya Yuga, because the creation has just begun. That's when Swayambhuva Manu begins being Swayambhuva Manu. So life duration is very long, 100,000 years, and the process of achieving spiritual perfection is the Satya Yuga process, the process of meditation. But even during Satya Yuga, we see that persons had interests in other things. This is coming to the stage of towards the end of the reign of towards the end of the Satya Yuga, because when this lineage of kings is broken following King Puranjana, we find Canto 5 begins with Swayambhuva Manu having a dilemma that he has to have somebody continue the lineage of kings. So he goes to his first son, Priyavrata, requests him to take up this service. So there it's a very elevated age, Satya Yuga, where most persons are very qualified. And in fact, Narada took interest in King Prachini Parishat because all of the other members of his lineage were disciples of Narada, who he delivered to the stage of pure devotional service. Narada is very powerful, Acharya. And here's one in that line, King Prachini Parishat, that kind of slipped a little and became interested in fruitive activity. So this allegorical Paranjana is actually King Prachini Parishat, just by a different name, who is interested in fruitive activity. And those interested in fruitive activity have strong interest in activities that bring sense gratification. That's what fruitive activity is intended for. Artha is for kama, for producing things that bring enjoyment. And persons are interested in family life because of that reason. They're interested in the happiness of family life. So, and not here in this section is, you know, the foolishness of the happiness of family life as a purpose to bring material happiness into life. For such persons, begetting children and raising children and the whole program is in itself like important as far as achieving that hoped for happiness is concerned. So through degradation, Prabhupada is speaking, this is in this age, there was no consideration of producing children or having sex for the purpose of producing children and then deciding we don't want the child, so to kill the child. The concept of contraception was foreign to Vedic teaching. So how has it been introduced? It's been introduced where persons want that the sense pleasure without the responsibility of what is the byproduct of that sense pleasure. That's where contraception comes in. And it's very obvious the natural birth control program is you control sex life. And if one doesn't want the byproduct, then one doesn't take up the activity. Instead of taking up the activity and destroy the byproduct. As if using the word byproduct, this is Srila Prabhupada's term, it's in the verse, parinama, as if, you know, like children are simply byproducts. You know, like in a chemical reaction or something, you want something and to get that something, there's some byproducts. So you remove the byproducts because you're only interested in the something. Parinama has another application when our acharyas are describing the teachings of Vyasadeva. The technical language to describe Vyasadeva's teachings is Shakti Parinama Vad. Vada means doctrine, and the doctrine of the transformation of energies. That's how it's commonly translated, parinama, transformation. That is to say, the personality of Godhead has unlimited potencies. Parashya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. He has unlimited potencies. But those potencies may be dormant, or those potencies may be extended. And then he can again withdraw those potencies. That's different than, the similarity between that statement I just made and Ramanujacharya's teaching is that he has attributes or vishishtas, and those vishishtas or attributes may be in a dormant state, they may be in a manifest state, and he may withdraw them again. But the relationship between the supreme source of everything and his attributes is that there is a relationship of oneness between himself and his attributes. So what's creation is a manifestation of some of the Lord's attributes. Annihilation is the withdrawal of those attributes. And he extends in the spiritual world, they're eternally manifest. And the material world, it's another category of his attributes, and they're manifest and withdrawn like that. With Lord Chaitanya's teachings, there's this, their difference and non-difference at the same time characteristic. The difference is the energy is not the same as the energetic. The sunshine is not the same as the sun. The light of the sun is coming into the temple room, but the sun has not entered the temple room. But you don't find the sun shine without the sun. So there's they're inseparable, but they're different. With Vyasadeva's teachings is that this is how the Bhagavatam describes it. When it goes down to the detail, the unfolding of the material elements and the withdrawal or rewinding of the material elements, folding back into the unmanifest state of those material elements, and those material elements are energy of the Supreme Lord, Shakti. In this case, apara prakriti, or inferior energy. So he manifests, he withdraws his energies, and everything is but a transformation of different states of material energy. Sounds like something like Einstein said, except the Vedas said it before he said it. Life is but transformations of states of energy or states of matter. So, when a human being takes the position of trying to imitate or takes the position of being the enjoyer of prakriti, there are similar byproducts or parinama. We need to have the guy with the mean blower doing that right at the temple room during class. Whoop to Jill. Tell him where to go. That side of the field. Buddy. Okay. When the human being or the tiny living entity imitates the position of the supreme enjoyer, there are also, by interacting with prakriti in the matter of trying to be the enjoyer of prakriti, there are byproducts or there are transformations. It makes it look like, just as the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, that the demoniacs say that there's life is but a byproduct of sex. That's all that it is. And so, that is, I'm the cause of the transformations of matter, and I create life, and life is but a different state of matter, and I can create it. Most materialists don't have very deep thought on this subject matter. They just do it. But those that are a little more thoughtful and want to justify the rationality of it all is we're creating, and they're byproducts in our act of creating. And children are the byproducts of family life, commonly. And Nara is describing this fictitious King Paranjana who has lots and lots and lots of byproducts, but not so uncommon for people of the day. 1,100 sons and 110 daughters. There's a not so dissimilar proportion between Daksha and his 10,000 sons and his 1,000 sons, and when they were all brought into Narada's bhakti program, then Daksha decided, I'm going to produce daughters instead. But it was a much smaller number of daughters in comparison. In any case, the focus that Prabhupada is placing here in the purport is two things: the extraordinary number of children King Paranjana was producing, and as a result, 50% of his life was taken up in producing and raising those children, because raising children takes a lot of time and energy. And 50% of life is past. So, but in comparison, Prabhupada is saying, even in the modern circumstance, Kali Yuga, not so many children are produced in comparison, but a big part of life is invested in producing, training, caring, educating, raising children. So, if the purpose, the next paragraph is, if the purpose is properly understood, then it's a Krishna conscious activity. And if the purpose is not understood, then it's a waste of time. It's a waste of valuable human energy away from life's purpose. And the other point that Prabhupada is making is when one has a Krishna conscious wife, and when the wife is fortunate enough to have a Krishna conscious husband, then by discussing together they can decide, we have our hands full with our training of Krishna conscious children. Let us take up a common decision that we will not produce any additional children, and therefore that's the natural system of contraception. I was visiting recently in China, and I was very surprised to hear that the government pays people, if they decide to have only one child, the government will pay them money to have only one child. Not little incentive. And the government will pay for abortions. Like, you know, not just here's a glass of water, but you drink this glass of water, we'll pay you to drink this glass of water. Just like so liberally. And they feel it's important because we have such a huge population. And it's true they have a huge population. And they don't have unlimited space to put in that huge population. I was at the Illinois Institute of Technology last semester, and no, it was early this semester, and some graduate students from China were, some little discussion on the topic of free will, and he brought up the fact that he thinks, oh, yeah, the discussion was, how does one decide the standard of what's right and wrong? What's to be done, what's not to be done? When we are making free will choices, how do we know by what standard? And he was making the argument that there are certain things that are just common sense and everybody knows. And I said, well, what about capital punishment? Some persons say, it's obvious, you can't take another person's life because they've taken a life. You're doing the same wrong thing that they've done. To them, that's obvious. Another person says, no, because this person is dangerous and they should be killed, so they're not going to do this again to anyone else. And then there's a third voice that says it's an act of releasing this person from the karma of that killing. That's an act of mercy to have them killed. So we have three different views. And who is to say which is the common sense? So just listening to Prabhupada speaking to some people, it was in Bombay, and it was a question-answer session, and somebody in the audience was couldn't tell exactly what he was saying because it was the recording of his voice wasn't clear, but he was objecting to Prabhupada's point of view. So Prabhupada said, you say according to science, and I say that means the Americans. So you want to listen to the Americans, and I want to listen to Krishna. Now who is right? Who is going to decide? And if you say, well, I can decide, then he said, you're doing the same thing Vivekananda did. Then I can decide, and I can decide, and I can decide, and I can decide, and who's going to decide? Who can decide?
Nobody, somebody, everybody.
So I say, I accept Krishna as authority, and you say you accept the Americans as the authority. Then you're free to do that. But who is right? And because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, I'm not right. He's right. So back to the scientist. Back to this policy of capital punishment. Who's to say what's right? Or, I said, let's take abortion. Is abortion right? We have this issue, at least in America, where, you know, the right to choice and the right to life. And both parties are very invested in their point of view. He said, that's very easy. The abortion is justified. I said, really? Tell me why. Well, in our country, the population is so huge, and if a young woman has pregnancy and she doesn't want the child, that'll be horrible for the child and it'll be bad for the population. So abortion is fine. The government supports this policy. If a woman wants, step right up. We'll take care of it for you. I said, what if you were the living entity within the womb of the mother? Would you say the same thing? He didn't know what to say to that one. Well, I guess so, because, you know, I'd be an unwanted child and I would be unhappy. And what are the standards for deciding what's right, what's to be done, what's not to be done? Our Vedic proposition is what's to be done is determined by the source who created this place. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Religion is not something a man can make up, but it's something that God establishes. We've all heard this so many times. We can't get together here in the room and decide, well, let's make some laws. Like, you know, the speed limit isn't 50 miles an hour, it's 100 miles an hour. And we'll make a law that says you don't drive on the right side, you drive on the left side, and make another law that says whatever we want. And it's meaningless. We make up some laws. And if religion today is on the basis of people make up their own laws, that's not what religion is. But largely, that's what the program is. It's not something that God has given, but people have made up. And so this, going back to the purport, the verse, and well, the purport specifically, the system of contraception is not something that's God-given. The God-given system of contraception is what Prabhupada has explained in the purport. A conscientious man and his Krishna-conscious wife apply intelligence to the situation and decide, let us not produce more children at this stage of our life. And that's that nature's arrangement. That's the natural arrangement. But those that don't want the natural arrangement, they want the other, then they're implicated in sinful life. And as Prabhupada is saying, they don't care. Because the thing that's important to them is sense gratification, and sinful life is not something that fits into their paradigm. It's just not something that fits into their paradigm. And it's real easy. You just you move the words of the scripture around so that it's okay. And your sense gratification is justified. That's not what religion is. There's a law given by God and one follows it. There's a natural arrangement of things and one follows it. So back to the bigger picture of what's being presented. Narada is showing by this allegory, the story of King Paranjana, of the plight of a materialistic person that's pursuing sense gratification. Even under the codes of religion, pursuing sense gratification implicates one. Not only implicates one in the results of pious activity, but unavoidably involves one in the results of sinful activity. Unavoidably. And the primary thing is forgetfulness of our relationship with the personality of Godhead through pursuit of sense gratification. That's what happens. One's spiritual consciousness becomes covered. That's what Narada is illustrating to King Prachini Parishat. To be continued. The 110 daughters of King Paranjana. Any comments or questions?
Last line, two lines, Prabhupada mentioned the byproduct of...
Children are called parinama, or byproducts. And when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproduct should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. You like that one? Me too. Yes?
We had a little discussion there about how whether to perceive what's right and wrong based on their experience as opposed to accepting
authority.
Particular authority of faith. And every society we see that goes on. For China,
yeah.
Based on the society's norms, that's a perfectly acceptable procedure. Nobody seems to mind. It's just acceptable that A, we're not going to have sense control, and B, the government will cover it. Whereas in many other societies, they do stress this idea of sense control, but still allow that the person has the right to make choices on the basis of what they're doing. I don't want this to go into the discussion of the abortion issue. It's just that you brought up that particular topic. So therefore, in terms of any society, big or small, how do we guard against doctrines of convenience and justification as opposed to what really should be considered right and proper in a society that does in fact change on a regular basis?
Well, the best way to guard it against it is the Acharya principle. That's the best way. Excuse me?
In the realistic way
is one follows the principles established by Acharya. So fidelity to, in our case, fidelity to our founder Acharya is the standard, is the protection. You know, let's take chocolate. You know, did Prabhupada, and what did, you know, what did Prabhupada say about chocolate? So there's evidence, something, something, and then, but there's other evidence, something, something, and then you take the whole, look at the whole evidence, and it was no. But then some people say, well, it's not such a big thing, so let's not make a big thing. Go ahead and have chocolate. And other people can say, no, it's a principle. So, the protection is following our Acharya. Let's take milk. Should we be vegans or should we offer milk to the deity and take milk products? What did our Acharya do? But then some people say no. And some people say yes. So the protection is the following of our Acharya. And that means one has to have faith in our founder Acharya, and one has to have a comprehensive picture of what our founder Acharya said and did. And that's a very rich source of protection and a rich treasure. The tendency, to go back to your question, the tendency will be to, you know, to find some means of justification. Move the circle a little further, you know, pushing the envelope, as they say. Move that Ram Rekha to, you know, a little bit further. And then some others want to go the other way. You know, the liberal and the conservative, the pizza and the pakoras program. And it's not unique to our organization. It's historical. It's predictable historical trend. That it's a very nice topic. Very nice topic. Very important topic. How do we preserve the essence while we continue to move into the changing times? How do you so the Acharya principle is the Acharya may adjust according to time and circumstance, and the ordinary folks, the rest of us, are to follow. So without an Acharya, we just keep the standards. The safe position is you maintain standards. But then, are there principles that are not being violated by adjusting details? And that's a delicate matter. One can say, I'm inclined to say, better to be safe than sorry. Better not to like step over the circle and see what happens. Or as Srila Prabhupada said, you Western devotees, you have this tendency to flirt with Maya. You want to see how far out on the limb you can go before the limb starts to crack. And then you rush back to the trunk of the tree because the limb started to crack. You know, to adjust things according to convenience was your turn. It's not advisable. Not advisable. But at the same time, the world that we're in is dynamically changing. And so we have to be effective. We're not a cloistered organization. We're a outreach organization. We have to be relevant to the world that's around us in order to bring the world around us to Krishna consciousness. How to allow details to be modified without touching principle. It's a little bit like what Rupa Goswami describes in Nectar Devotion, that what he's presented is principles and not details, and gives the example. The example is, in principle, a spiritual master must be accepted, and one should follow the instructions of a spiritual master. A detail is, one spiritual master may engage someone this way, and another spiritual master may engage another person in that way, and that's a detail. But it's just the example that he has given. In principle, one must accept a spiritual master. So that's, there are certain things that are just not negotiable. It's a lively topic. Well, for your information, there's a committee, has a really bells and whistles name to it. The Hermeneutics and Epistemology Committee. And so there are devotees that are involved in that, and understanding going out over time, how do we maintain the integrity of the teachings of our founder Acharya, and how are certain teachings to be interpreted or understood. You know, what's our dogma? What's the party line? What's the teaching, the Siddhanta? When Prabhupada said certain things, you know, it came about from certain things that Prabhupada said in his books that some people say it was influenced by his times and not necessarily scriptural authority. So how do you... And they're taking up some easier ones before they go to the harder ones, and they have the list and they're working on it. Devamrita Swami, Pir Krishna Maharaj, and Vrita Karma are involved in that committee. I think Pir Krishna Maharaj and Revati Raman. The devotee from Boise.
Radhika Raman.
Yeah. And of course, Vidyanand Maharaj, who likes to...
He's stirred up. A little bit. Had a few extra ingredients.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Human beings have natural propensity for sense gratification. So, the Shastras, what they say, sense gratification cannot be stopped totally, but can be regulated and purified. Say, for example, here we are talking about King Puranjana having sex. Yes, you can have sex, but for producing Krishna conscious children. Eating, for example. Eating itself cannot be stopped totally, but you eat Krishna conscious. So the whole idea is to purify the senses. And then another place it says, Tamashana Indriya Priti Lagho Jivet Devata. So it's not that it can totally stop, you just regulate it and you purify it. Yukta Aharya.
You're making an editorial comment about the topic. Is that what just happened? Okay. Yes.
Well, I said, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. But, I mean, the last thing you kind of said was kind of like the main point. That, I don't know, I kind of found it a little bit disturbing. I want to let you say something on it. This idea that when Prabhupada said it was by his time, I just don't accept it.
I don't either. I don't either. But, you know, there are persons that have that, you know, it's the influence of academia. There's for example, there's a book.
With a question?
It's not exactly a question. It's a statement or an objection, or like, I'm disturbed when I hear people say things like, some of the things that Srila Prabhupada spoke about were due to the influence of his times. There's a... forget the title of the book. There's a book, a biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where the author, one of Prabhupada's disciples, forgetting his name, makes this introduction that most of the commonly the articles, the biographies of great Vaishnavas and great personalities, particularly religious spiritual personalities, are from that perspective of their, like, you know, their divinity. And there's a long term that says what that is like. There's another that describes the person in terms of his, it describes his greatness in terms of his seizing the moment, and, you know, the great person rose to the occasion because of his greatness and brought together different forces of his times, not exactly was a product of his times, but answered a need for humanity by his greatness. And he writes the whole biography like that. When Sansarup Maharaj was requested by the GBC to write the biography, Lilamrita, he had to make a choice between two approaches. One approach was that Srila Prabhupada became a perfected soul. And another approach was Prabhupada was a perfect soul descending into this world, showing us by example how, if you were a conditioned soul, how you could become a conditioned soul. But it was entirely a divine arrangement to do so. He chose the former. And some other persons had strong objection. They just couldn't see Prabhupada that way. And it's not even necessarily that Sansarup Maharaj saw Prabhupada the other way, but he wrote the literature in that way, that someone who was amongst us and became a perfected being. Something like Narada was, you know, an ordinary boy and became Narada, became a perfected spiritual being in one lifetime. So there are different ways to see a great personality. I like you, not like I become disturbed, I a little bit become disturbed, but if it helps somebody, it doesn't reduce Srila Prabhupada's position as a pure devotee to say that when he spoke on certain subject matters, whether you say, you know, he spoke from a transcendental position, not at all from a position of he was a product of his times. Like here's a little example. At Scottish Church's College, Srila Prabhupada had a business course. And in the business course, there was a professor that was saying that economic development comes from attachment to family. You've heard that in his lectures. And that's not, you know, from this Purana or that Purana. It's an experience that he had. And he speaks on it as a truth. Or another one is, you know, the size of the brain of a woman, the size of the brain of a man. That's not from this Purana or that Purana, it's something that he heard. And then he says, some people say, anyway, it doesn't that Prabhupada made reference to such things doesn't reduce his position as a bona fide spiritual master and a pure devotee any more than some have come from any in our present context in let's say Jayananda, just because he's like everybody loves him. Was he a pure devotee or not? Or he was an American growing up in America. When I was my first introduction to him, to Jayananda's association, was in New York, and he was building the Rath Yatra cart for the first Rath Yatra that Prabhupada attended. After the Rath Yatra was over, he went and attended, is overseeing a Hare Krishna booth and a state fair. And he just he needed a pair of pants and he didn't want to spend Krishna's money. So he stole the pair of pants. He got arrested for stealing a pair of pants. We had to come bail him out of jail because he just didn't want to spend Krishna's money. It's like for the whole Rath Yatra, he would beg the lumber, the wheels, the nails, the everything. He hardly spent any money, even the paint, because that was just his nature. He wanted people to be engaged in Krishna's service. So he was engaging the store in Krishna's service.
They were freely giving.
Huh?
And they were freely giving.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to pay to get him out of jail.
It was a little arrangement. We paid for the pants, I think. But it doesn't reduce his qualification, his purity. It's not the same issue of the Prabhupada. It's just making an example that I've got my eyes on the clock up here, and I have a conference call at 8:45.
Okay.
And we have people coming in getting ready for the Vyasa Puja. But I share, just a little personal comment, I share your point of view. At the same time that some persons need to talk this over and get down to brass tacks, because they're intellectuals and there's schools of thought that say different things out there in the intellectual world, and how do you handle those people that don't think like we think? They're not I wish I could think of the name. They're not thinking of the individual as self-effulgently great. They're thinking of the person just in terms of their behaviors and their speech, and looking at that without the devotion that we have for that person. And that because they're interacting with those individuals, there are different measures of how you look at a person's activity. Going out over time, particularly, is valuable, because we have this great appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, or Bhaktisiddhanta, or Gaurakishoredas Babaji, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and other persons don't. And how are we going to interact with those persons that don't? Because they've got questions in their mind. Or we could say, well, he's a pure devotee. How can you question him? That's not where he was coming from. He wasn't just influenced by his time and spoke things. It was selective. What he spoke was something that resonated with. So he didn't couch it in terms of the absolute truth. He couched it in terms of somebody said something. Okay, I'm going to end. I'm sorry for the abrupt ending. Hare Krishna. See the Prabhupada. Jai.